Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, toy department time, boys and girls, as we continue this year of Toy Department After Dark.
Yeah.
The content's not any hotter. We're just more tired.
Yeah, I'm about the same. I wouldn't want to suggest that I'm in better shape at like 9 a.m. than I am at 9 p.m. because that's simply not true.
The funny thing is that I generally consider myself a night person.
Yeah.
Much more than a daytime person. But
right.
These...
I mean, it's later where you are, much later.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely you're just in the evening. Well, I'm in the late night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When we do this. But I do feel like pandemic days are like, they're a little different.
That's true. That's true. It's harder to keep track of everything.
Yes, it sure is, including what time it is. All right, well, we have a lot to get to this week, right? We watched a lot of stuff.
Sure did, man. Sure did.
So maybe we should just dive in. You want to start with Top Chef since it just ended?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, spoiler. You can't talk about an episode of Top Chef without spoiling it. But I'll just come out and say, you know, tough beat for me tonight. You know, as a guy came into the season rooting for Kevin and Nene, to watch them have to compete in Last Chance Kitchen at the end of the evening, not delightful. I felt like this was certainly the least suspenseful Restaurant Wars that I'd ever seen, and maybe one of the least suspenseful episodes of the show.
In terms
that
of,
I can recall.
Well, yeah, and what's so crazy about that is when they picked the teams, you would have thought exactly this result in the opposite direction, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that four of the five best chefs in this competition, four of them were on one team comprised of four people.
Yeah,
so,
and I would say three of the top four chefs. In fact, I would say the top three chefs were all on one team.
I mean, I think
Gregory is probably one of the top three.
Yeah,
but
I didn't realize this, and you know, I'll credit Pack Your Knives podcast for pointing it out. There have only been three people who have won challenges. All three of those people have won three, and no one else has won anything to this season today.
Gone.
And that's right, and that's Gregory, Kevin, and Melissa.
As the judges were talking about Kevin's restaurant, the only consistent thing was they loved every single one of Melissa's dishes.
Yeah, I did notice that. Although they did, had a mild criticism during the judges that they were all kind of the same. You know?
Yeah.
But you're right. While they were eating, Melissa's dishes came through. And look, you know, we talked about this coming into it last week in that, you know, winning that competition last week with the restaurant concept can be a curse because, you know, chef is the position where you're probably most likely to go home. Chef first, front of house second, right? So, you know, it definitely seemed like when they didn't like the restaurant that it was really going to come down to you, Kevin and Karen. And when they didn't even really bring up the service and the lines and some of those issues until about, I don't know, 7 minutes into the judging, I was like, oh, Kevin's going home.
Yeah.
And I mean, can you recall a time where they said blank, why should we just not send you home right now? Like,
I
feel like it's been,
I
think I've heard that before, but it's been a long time. And then for that person to go like, yeah, you're right. I should go home.
Well, okay. First of all, shout out to Kevin for not being a dick in that moment. That was well done. He should have gone home. It was pretty clear what happened there, and what happened is he went way overboard.
It was just too much.
It was just too much.
What do you think was the right number of dishes? Because I said eight, but I think probably like six would have really been the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, when some of them are like pickles on the side, fine. But 12 under any circumstances is absurd.
Yeah, well, and clearly that was also part of the issue that caused the table stacking,
exactly.
Right? Exactly. You know, because look, man, people can eat 12 plates of food family style.
Exactly.
You're gonna hang out.
That was the root of all of their problems. It was why they got behind. It was why there were so many mistakes. Like, there was just too much going on. And while I respect what he tried to sell to the judges, which was like, hey, you know, it's Top Chef. I wanted to do a lot because we're Top Chefs. It's like, okay, and yet. You've not only watched this show, but been on it before, and you know damn well overdoing it is the quickest way to get sent home.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing that somebody went home for overdoing it and it was not malarkey.
I'll tell you this. That was part of the genius, I think, of Gregory's picking malarkey first, which was absurd in real time. Like, everyone on the show, even Padma, was like, excuse me?
She literally was like,
can you explain yourself? And Gregory,
she did say that.
And Gregory was like, front of the house, baby. And it worked. As goofy as that guy is, he knows what he's doing in the front of the house. And that is such an obstacle in every Restaurant Wars.
My only counter to that is I think you could have gotten him with the second or third pick.
Yeah, but see, that's a classic draft fallacy. You know, if you know what you want, go get it. Don't worry too much about the value position.
Yeah, I suppose. Look,
if you got a player that fits your scheme, man, go get him.
Well, but here's the other thing, though, right? Is that knowing that you're going to cook Haitian food, like, that is don't you want skilled cooks in the 2 and 3 position? I don't know. Go ahead. You can go ahead and answer that before I get too far into the weeds.
Yeah, I don't think it matters, actually, because I think what he wanted to do really was most of it himself and have them all do like simple chef things that every chef can do. But he didn't open the concept up to them at all, which I think worked in his favor.
Well, I think that does help. What I was going to say is that you got to give it up, you know, as much shit as we've given her,
Leanne
probably made the most popular dish on that menu. So
that's because it was dessert, first of all. Second of all, I'm not even sure she made the ice cream because I heard Gregory talking about making it for her. And third of all, she had to get kicked off expediting because she was being a jag. And Stephanie was like, can we have a adult professional do this, please? And Gregory was like, get the F out of here, Leanne. You're effing everything up. And then she gave everybody attitude and pouted around the kitchen like a 3-year-old. Come on, man. I'm sorry. She's the worst. I'm sure she's a perfectly great chef. I'm sure she's not the worst chef because she wouldn't still be here. She is the worst person on this show.
She's not like disliked, though. Even the people that she's gotten into stuff with, right? Like, they all seem to enjoy having her around and respect her.
I think that's creative editing. There's no way everybody enjoys being around that person. There's just no way. Like, she's so obnoxious.
I don't really have any arguments for you. Like, and I'm not here to defend her, but I also don't have the same level of vitriol.
I obviously have a like crazy amount of hatred for this poor woman, but she does something. You have to admit, like, she does something every week that fits right into my description of her. Even if she's generally a wonderful person, she finds a way in every single episode to be like, exactly the kind of obnoxious jag that I describe her to be.
Yeah, I have a feeling that she is like if you're cooking in her kitchen, that she yells at you a lot.
Yeah, totally. That's 100% who she is.
Which I wonder, you know, and, in Hawaii, like, I feel like wouldn't necessarily play that well, even
yeah,
that's
an interesting
fairly
point.
Standard kitchen behavior.
That's an interesting point. I do, but, like, can you imagine her in Kevin's position being like, yeah, it's me, I'll wear it?
Well, I think that she's been...
Come on.
I don't know if accountable is the right word, but I think that she's been fairly upfront of that her performances have been poor on the show at times.
Yeah, well, she's
I don't think she's shied away from
she's been
acknowledging
in the bottom
that.
Three in yeah. like five of the six challenges. She can't hide yeah. from that.
Yeah,
it's not
I don't
like
know
she's
that she
saying
would've...
that when she's been in the middle of the pack and no one really knows how good her food yeah. is. The judges have outright told her to her face her food is bad like four of the seven episodes.
I'm just yeah I don't know that I've seen many chefs step up in the manner that Kevin has. Not a few.
No,
but that
no,
was...
no, no. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely very few of these people would do that. But I do feel yeah. like there's a handful on this show. Like Gregory, Melissa. I don't know about Karen. But a lot of these people seem like sweethearts for the chef game.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that's true. I would add Eric into that group. Eric
yeah, Eric,
like a,
absolutely.
Genuinely nice dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway.
This that, was, that, as this restaurant was... wars go, you know what I mean, being an episode that we tend to look forward to every season,
yep.
it wasn't a great one.
No.
But,
and I would say that if they were experimenting with a new strategy to, like, get the concept the week before, interesting idea. Patient died during the procedure. No good.
Yeah, I also just think that they may need to shake it up in terms of the way that they judge it, because it's getting too obvious that, like, the executive chef is so on the chopping block.
Right.
And every year some good – and maybe they like it that way, but it seems like every year people that really could win this competition wind up going home in restaurant wars, either as chef or front of house, which is – neither one of those is a particularly satisfying exit. When you see a good chef leave for something that's not food, it's not satisfying. Right. And when you see a good chef leave because of execution, often by other people, it's not right. satisfying.
No,
and,
you're right.
And it can be, and it's getting starting to get a little predictable. So I kind of hope that they shake up the restaurant wars.
Yeah, and
format
also
in some way.
This one was predictable just because they were such a mess over in Kevin's restaurant. It was just an absolute disaster, basically, start to finish, from Karen yeah. dropping a poof on the ground in the first appetizer delivery to spilling wine.
Spilling wine, yeah.
Like, come on, I'm man.
That's kind of what I meant when, like, none of that stuff came up in the judges. I was like, oh, man.
Especially since her
Kevin
dish
up.
Was trash. Like, her yeah. dish was the one dish in either restaurant that they were like, this was bad.
Yeah, so if there had been other things that were flawless, maybe Kevin would have had a shot. But I do, and you know, I don't know if you picked up on Tom saying there was only one more chef he's got to beat in Last Chance Kitchen.
Well, he said one more before
to get to
the
finals. So really two more, yeah,
maybe,
or possibly three if they do some sort of double elimination.
Right,
but
that's what I was thinking. Maybe the finals would be a double or something. I don't know, but
yeah, it does seem that he's going to have a pretty reasonable shot.
I mean,
to get back in.
There's only seven people left, so that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, although that would seem to me that you would eliminate at least three going
well,
into
if,
sort of that final.
But if
right?
there's a double elimination, that's just 2 weeks.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Sounds like, well, it sounds like there's going to be a double elimination, though.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe a double elimination and then, like, you know, one more episode after he comes back before the final.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I mean, this has... This has really gotten to a point where they're all cooking such good food. It's a crapshoot. But at the same time, I think Gregory and Melissa have distinguished themselves even further as clear favorites.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here we are. I think I gave that set up. I want to say eight different people had won
right.
On Top Chef last season at this point. And again, we've only had three.
Yeah.
Unless you're counting the other members of Gregory's team as a win this
no,
week because they did
not.
All split the money.
I'm not counting them.
So
I also
but
just
yeah, I mean that's a Gregory win, right? So
totally a Gregory win. And just quickly on his restaurant, like they all sort of shared the sentiment that eating there made them want to go to Haiti and check it out, you know. And I will say that, like, just seeing it and hearing those things described made me want to go to his restaurant that is a Haitian restaurant really badly. So I hope he opens it and then I can eat there one day.
It's interesting. I'd like to try his food. Like conceptually, it didn't seem all that appealing to me. And I actually thought a couple of his dishes did not look particularly appetizing, but man, that fish looked amazing. And you know, it sounds like the dessert was one or two.
So. No, the dessert. Come on, pineapple upside down cake with rum raisin ice cream.
I love pineapple upside down cake.
Yeah, no, I mean that's shooting fish in a barrel, so to speak.
Yeah, but yeah, I wouldn't mind trying some Asian food. I definitely want to try his food.
Yeah,
you know, because I've seen people rave.
And I think anyone who is that connected and passionate about the thing they're making, because all due respect to Kevin. Because he seems to have had that in mind in some way, or maybe he's already got a restaurant like it, but like he didn't seem as there's something about the way Gregory talks about Haitian food that just like it, you could tell how much he's putting into it.
Yeah.
It's not a shot at Kevin in any way. It's just,
yeah, I would say Kevin's probably equally passionate about Southern food. It's just that he has already had the chance to open restaurants with many distinct takes on that already. You know what I mean? So I think his vision is more self-expressed.
Yeah.
Whereas Gregory's doing this Haitian thing for the first time, like his previous restaurants were in Haitian. So.
Yeah. But I also think there is something to the, like the fact that this is not a cuisine that is known nearly as well in America, that like gives him a fighting spirit about wanting to really blow
to represent it for people.
Yeah.
And you know, I think there was a point in time where Southern food was that way. Maybe at the start of Top Chef, it didn't quite have that sort of high end restaurant respect, but that time
that
is long
changed.
Come and gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, and look, the New Orleans houses and places like that, you know, Hugh Atchison's places, and, you know, it's not like Kevin did that, but yeah, it's around. Okay. Should we move on to the challenge?
Yes. Now, we did not put money on whether or not Jay would get up and return to action. I guess you would win.
I feel like that's a win for both of us.
Because
he did in fact return as I predicted, but he was also not medically able to finish, which is kind of what you predicted. So
yeah, exactly. And I guess he probably didn't break any bones, but you could tell from the moment you saw his eyes, he was concussed. And the fact that they let him walk back out there, can you imagine if instead of choosing the three-pointer tact after he had his brain exploded by Rogan, he had actually tried to run into him again? Like, Jay could be dead right now.
Yeah. When he asked for the rules explanation.
Oh, man.
I'm like, you don't even need to do the eyeballs then. It's like, sorry, dude, you can't, you know. Yeah,
if you don't know the rules of putting the fireball in the basket, like, something's very wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Not only just put it, she already had explained it.
Yes.
He'd already done it. And she'd already explained it, and he still had no idea.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, that was bad. I agree.
That's the, like, behind the scenes we don't get on football sidelines that's happening three times a game. And they're like, nah, he's good. Send it back in.
It would have been great if the challenge had a tent, you know?
Oh, my God. Just send him in the blue tent. If they just, like, popped up a tent next to the ring.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I will say, focusing more on the actual challenge part of this, is Rogan like a force? Is that the world we live in now?
Yeah, I kind of think so.
He has somehow, and it's especially interesting because I feel like last season he was just like Joss's little buddy. Like one season.
Certainly at the start.
Yeah, that's what I mean, at the start of last season. And I didn't feel like his win, you know, because he was on the winning team. I didn't feel like he was the driving force or anything. You know, it's not like I give him a ton of cred for that. But, man, he showed up ready this year. He looked incredibly
last season was Camp CT for him. You know what I mean?
Was what?
I think he was Camp CT. I think that being on that team with CT, I think he learned a lot. Honestly, a lot on the mental, political side.
That's what I was going to say, because he was he looked physically like a beast from the beginning. But he
And if you remember, he came into last year really determined after going out in the first, first episode last season to be in better physical shape. So he kind of nailed that last year. And then I think he sort of rounded the mental game this year, and it's really showing.
Yeah, it really is. And he's played this great, and now he's the only guy eligible. And man, TJ, like, I know TJ's not in control, but it's easier to just talk like he is. TJ looks like he's about ready to just say, that's it. All the dudes come down here and you just Royal Rumble until one guy's standing and him and Rogan are going to the finals, because this is bullshit. Like, he's had it straight up to here.
Palpable disgust.
Oh, my God. My favorite new TJ thing is when someone's like, I was going to put myself in TJ, but I decided not to. And he's like, ugh. I'm disgusted with you.
It's like, do you not understand the point of this?
Yeah. Meanwhile, like, somehow, beautifully, Zach has become a major player in this season without being present.
Yeah. I mean, Jenna giving Kayla relationship advice early on in that episode.
Hilarious.
That's like...
I also like
talking about the blind leading the blind.
There's also like basically a smash cut from her in one ITM going, yeah, Zach and I have been on and off, but we've been on for 2 years and we're going to be together forever, to her going, he won't take my calls. I don't know what's going on.
I wrote this quote down that somebody just said in the ITM. He looks through my DMs from 2 years ago when we weren't dating, and now he's mad. And this is my favorite part. And I feel like it's all my fault.
That was unbelievable. Like, she was like, my boyfriend is being a psychopath, and I feel like it's all my fault.
Yeah.
So like, I almost did a double take.
If there's anything that is revealing about Jenna's psyche, it is that particular moment right there.
Yep. Yep. Tell me if maybe I'm wrong. Look, I want to like Zach, which is part of my problem here. Like, I find him an enjoyable character, and the fact that he seems to be a total dirtbag is tough for me to reconcile. That said, I feel like there's got to be more going on here. Because when he was berating her, which, again, it's a bad look, and I don't know how to defend it, so I'm not going to, but he was like, he was basically like, I think you cheated on me. And he was like, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not doing this now. Like, I just feel like this feels very produced to me right now. And I really want to know what's going on.
I honestly feel like, and I say this in really enjoying the television that he puts out, I feel like he might be mentally ill, to be honest. I really do, because I've seen him, right? You've seen sort of different shades of Zach years, and you've seen him just be mean and a little bit psychotic.
Yes.
And then other times really nice and really, like, you know what I mean? Like, so
he is a mysterious individual.
Yeah.
I feel like there's stuff we're not seeing here that, well, obviously there's stuff we're not seeing, but I feel like there's specific complications to this relationship squabble, that is like, there's more here than meets the eye.
It's possible, but it is very clear that every veteran woman on this show is
on genocide.
Yeah, and it's like, you got to get rid of this dude. Like, I believe their relationship was referred to as bullshit by more than one.
Certainly Nani was on fire this episode.
Yeah, I think even Anissa had a few, like,
Anissa had the best moments of this episode, though.
Like, yeah. Although she has definitely been the Leanne of this season.
No, well, see, I don't like that. I don't like that. She's been worse than that, performance
in the challenges. Yes, yeah. In the challenges.
But,
sorry.
But the problem with Leanne is not that she's not a good chef, even though that also seems to be true. It's her attitude and personality that drive me nuts.
Sorry.
I love Anissa's
I was only speaking
attitude.
Performance only. Yeah, Anissa out of the competition is great. Yeah.
And she is getting so funny in these ITMs. Like, especially being paired with Nelson, who also, like, what is going on there?
I mean, first of all, Dew can't get out of his own way.
He is a mess. And
I feel like Nelson is a guy that we see too much of in real life right now. And I'm going to veer slightly out of the toy department for this. He is that guy who is convinced that he's got it all figured out, that he knows the real story, when really he's just guessing and he's almost certainly wrong. And like,
idiot.
There's too much of that guy in real life, that dumb guy that thinks he's got the whole game figured out. You know what I mean?
Right. And like, his reasoning doesn't even make sense. Like, he's living on a different planet.
But he felt that so deeply to allow him to go off in that way.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen to him many times before, right?
Yes.
Where he just
he's gotten himself kicked off seasons for losing his mind over nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, unfortunately, you know, his ally in the game, you know,
Corey's a sweet boy though.
He's a sweet boy who is also kind of a box of rocks, right?
Yes.
So it's like
he couldn't set off the bomb.
Yeah.
Corey is one of my favorite characters just because he's so sweet, and his entire aesthetic is like, oh no.
He's like, another one though, not like Zach, where it's like good TV, but do not date him under any circumstances.
Oh my god. For different reasons than Zach, but absolutely don't date him. Apparently he's on like, were you telling me this, that he's on like,
yeah, Teen Mom.
Oh my god. I can't even.
Yep.
Let me ask you this.
Only know because I've seen the previews.
Yeah. Well, of course. So you say. Anyway, what do you think is about to happen here?
Like on this season?
Like in this elimination. Because we stopped.
I have no idea.
Right? I mean, we don't even know who's in.
Yeah, no idea.
This could go so many different directions. And I thought, you know, Jordan says he wants Jenna on the tribunal for strategic reasons. But it
he's angling to get Tori in.
To me. That doesn't make sense. The best way to get
Tori in.
He's
trying to be a move ahead is to just put Tori in.
Yes. Right now,
he feels like he'll have more control over the opponent if he gets Jenna to put her in.
But if Jenna puts in an opponent that's weak, Jenna's going to go in.
Well, no, but the House is going to vote the opponent in, right? He doesn't want to put it in the hands of the House, was what he was saying.
He doesn't want to put the opponent in the hands of the House, but by doing that, he's essentially putting Tori getting in the hands of the House.
Yeah, I don't know. So, like, I think Jenny, who already has a skull, right, and probably not going in, I think Tori's a pretty good bet to whip anybody's ass.
Which is exactly why I would have put Tori.
Why you should just put her in to begin. And then
put her on the tribunal. She can just decide to go in. Nani doesn't seem to want to go in. So, like, if Jenna wants to go in, Jordan won't be able to put Tori in.
Yeah. It is. I do think it's interesting for Nani, right? Because that's generally Nani's game, right? Is to just kind of fly under the radar in terms of those eliminations, and then you're there at the end.
Nani is more screwed than anyone by this format.
I think she is really going to try to pick her spot. And I don't know that that is the way to go about this. She just needs to like probably jump in there and get it over with, you know?
Well,
and then she can go back to playing
her
game.
Because who do you think Nani can beat in the House right now?
Who do I think? Big T.
That's it. Right. Is there anyone else?
You know, I mean, I give her a chance against D. Mm-hmm. I probably favor D, but I give her a chance against D. I mean, look, obviously everyone has a puncher's chance against anybody. Given
yes,
the way some
but,
of these things have gone.
But if we were
there
ranking,
are some people like KC, like who the I still don't understand who KC is.
That's true.
That's true. So she's a bit of a wild card.
But
and then
like,
I'm starting to run out of people at that point.
That's the thing. Nani's bottom three of the
I think
girls.
She could take Kayla, maybe.
Oof. I'd pick yeah, maybe, but I would pick Kayla. Like if I was
You're
doing
right,
a ranking, Nani's
too.
Bottom three of the women. And yeah. So if I'm her, I don't know. I don't know how you play that. But you definitely want to be on the tribunal and in control. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so, she's like, managed to do that. She's,
and,
played,
and
she's
look,
playing a good political game as usual.
And I don't think I don't think Nani or Jenna is going to go in if the House votes Tory. So the best thing Jordan and Tory can do right now is just sell hard to the House. Look, Tory wants to go in. Why make an enemy? Just vote
right,
her.
Which is another way she can still go, by the way, right? Like, Jordan doesn't have to do the third order stuff, so...
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying is, but now you're depending on the House to agree to that plan, and who knows what the House will do, because the House is.
It's interesting that Jordan seems way more interested in getting Tory in there than he is going in himself.
Uh huh.
Now, I know, I understand, obviously, it's a girls' elimination this week, but when it's been a guy's elimination, he hasn't really seemed to be like chomping at the bit to get in there, which
is
interesting to me.
He's won and she hasn't, right?
Yes.
I feel like that was a conversation pre-show off camera.
Oh, that it was just, like, you're going to do everything?
Listen, I got to win. I need a win here, buddy. And he was like, okay. Because as much of a dick as he is, he does to me seem like the kind of guy who would find a way to get just as much satisfaction out of creatively helping Tory win as winning himself.
Yeah. How do you feel about the potential of the Wes Bailey Swaggy CKC Alliance?
Yeah, look, I think it's powerful.
KC the city, by the way, not KC the player.
By the way, did you know? Did it? Okay, how can I ask this question in a creative way? The most shocking moment of this episode for me was learning a fact about somebody. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
When they were starting the Fast and Furious challenge, shout out to product placement, by the way. Open Table, big appearance in this week's Top Show.
Yeah. Came in hard, Open Table.
Yeah. But when they started the Fast and Furious challenge, and Swaggy C was hanging off the side of the thing, he's like, well, I'm 6'4", so I got some good reach. And I was like, what, huh?
Yeah, 6'4"? That did catch me. I was like, I had no idea he was tall.
Like, I started racking my brain, and then, like, he never really stood next to anyone for the rest of the show, so I didn't have a chance to compare. But
yeah.
I feel like 6'4 usually stands out like a sore thumb on the challenge. And, like, Fessy is towering over everybody. So is he 6'6"? What's going on?
I don't know. I mean, Josh is pretty tall, right?
Yeah. And Swaggy has not seemed at those guys' size to me, but I must not have been paying close enough attention to him.
That was a surprise to me. And you and I have talked, and I think maybe even said on the show, Bailey looks like a different person every time I see her. Like, half the time, I need the Chiron to be like, oh, that's Bailey.
Yeah, she's got a lot of different looks. Both the hair and makeup change.
More than Big T, who's like rocking wigs every place.
Yeah. Well, Bailey might have some wig action going on too. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, she's a real chameleon. And you know, there's something about the two of them and the amount of screen time they're getting. Like, I just have a feeling that they are instrumental in how this season plays out.
Agreed. And it already feels like no one's really treating them like rookies.
It does.
There's a marked difference in the way that they have been treated and the way that Jay has been treated. And I don't think that boils down to the fact that they've been pretty successful in challenges, because Jay was fairly successful and certainly pretty successful in eliminations. So
I think Jay, Jay had the bad luck of being in the first elimination. And even though he won, everyone was like, "Nah, we already voted this guy in."
Well, and then he did some other things, I think, that brought it upon.
he did one other thing anyway. Yeah.
He sure did. I know. And I don't even really think he did that. I think he was just there.
Yeah, that's true. He just sort of stood there while D humped him and made out with him.
Yep, yep. He probably, he should have disavowed that from the start. All right, should we move on to Last Dance 5 and 6?
Yes, please. Although I think this can be pretty quick.
These are my two favorites so far.
Yeah.
For me, the Dream Team practice stuff. And to actually see some of that footage,
yes,
which had been mythologized forever, that stuff was gold.
I'm sure you're just like me. If they have an entire practice worth of that grainy footage, I would watch it like a movie.
Oh, I'm sure. And I bet they do.
They must. Like, it's not like whoever was videotaping that put down the camera, which was probably a video camera on a tripod at that point.
I was gonna say, I don't think anybody was even holding it, right? It seemed like it was one of those, like, still, you know, sort of,
yeah.
I don't know, but still, because it seemed like it's moving left to right, but yeah.
Right. No, like, that footage fixed. Exists, and I need it. I want to inject it in my veins. Even the stuff we got was incredible. And when you see Michael just sort of casually take over against the best players, not just in the world, but basically the best players in the history of the world, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, and Magic said the exact wrong thing.
Yep.
to precipitate that. So.
I mean, if there's a theme of these six episodes so far, it's the Hulk, right? It's don't make him angry because you won't like him when he's angry.
Yeah. Well, you know, that brings up a thing for me. And I think this is certainly different, you know, for a couple of reasons for you, you know, notably you're a Bulls fan. You're from Chicago.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't like Michael Jordan when this was happening. I always respected him, obviously. Like, I think it was tough to not acknowledge that he was the greatest player in the game at the time, and now the greatest player ever, I think, by the time he was done. Like, you know, full stop. But I always rooted against him, and I didn't particularly enjoy his persona on the basketball court, and I still feel like that. I'm not attracted to that kind of maniacal intensity, like that Hulk thing,
yeah,
just doesn't do it for me. And I think that shows in my feelings about Kevin Garnett, right? Like, it's kind of the same thing, you know. I just don't, aesthetically, personality wise like, that whole vibe just doesn't lock in with me, you know. And
do you feel any differently about Jordan specifically after listening to him talk sort of frankly to the camera for 6 hours?
You know, I feel it even more.
Okay.
Like, yeah, like, you know, again, full respect to the guy. Like, I'm amazed by the feats. I am amazed by what he achieved. And I almost think, like, well, if you had to be this to do that, I don't even know if it's worth it, because
yeah,
you kind of suck. That's sort of what I'm, and I don't necessarily feel like we've gotten to the parts of him being suckiest. I hear that there's much more of that in the next one.
The next episode, I believe, is where we get the recounting of him giving Steve Kerr a black eye.
Yeah, like, he's an awful dude for the most part, I think. And I, you know, I know that part of this was to get his side out and to understand why, like, you know, but he's a bully, and he's just kind of a dick. And I recognize it's what makes him great. And it can be compelling to watch, certainly. But yeah, this is just, he's just not my dude.
Yeah. And that's fine.
I've always liked the Magics of the world that, you know, we're certainly competitive. I mean, you see it in those Dream Team practices, but, like, could still be a guy, and you know what I mean? And throw you a smile.
Right.
And ridiculously petty at all times.
Yeah. A couple things. I do think there's something to the authenticity of it that is appealing to me. He can be a bully and harsh and mean and unforgiving. I think he can also be very human at times.
Yeah, I agree, and I do think it's authentic. And I'm kind of like he sort of says it at one point where he's like, "I'm going to set an example, and you know, if you don't like the example I'm setting, that maybe I'm not the guy you should be following." And I'm like, "Yep, you're not my guy."
So, right. Yeah, and he's a specific sort of guy, and yeah. I see. I don't know. I don't know how I pick who I like, to be perfectly honest, because I love Kevin Garnett, but I never really liked Kobe, and Kobe really was just doing a Michael impression when it comes to a lot of this stuff.
I also didn't like Kobe.
Right,
rest in peace.
And I don't think I generally like players like that. I certainly don't like coaches who behave like that. Like, I don't think you have to be a dick all the time. But I also think there's something to what Michael's doing that is different than just being a dick. And
well, look, he certainly had the charisma on the other side of it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I also think, like, as a person, he's actually kind of an interesting and probably decent person on some levels. On others, not. But I don't look at him like I look at dudes in sports that I feel like, that's a bad guy.
Yeah, no, it's not bad guys. Maybe the wrong word. It's more just a dick. He's a dick.
Yeah, he could be a real dick. There's no question about it. Yeah. There's no question like, about it.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit different from Kevin Garnett's intensity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is like scary in this more menacing way. I feel like maybe the Jordan was. You know what I mean?
Well,
like Jordan
more,
was, I don't know. Like Jordan really wanted to humiliate you. Like that story that I think was Bill Wennington told about like coming up to the dollar blackjack table in the front of the bus to just be like, "I want my money in your pocket." You know
the
what
way
I mean?
Around, but yeah.
Or yeah, I want your money in my pocket. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
and that's why I thought, you know, all the gambling stuff is funny. And I assume we'll get to the conspiracy theory stuff in the next episode. But first of all, the conspiracy theory is totally untenable. Like, there's no way he was suspended from the league. It doesn't make any sense on any level. That said, there's certainly a reading of this where Michael Jordan has a gambling problem. And yet, when he says, "No, I don't have a gambling problem. I have a competition problem," I get what he's saying, and I think he's right. Because it's not the gambling. It's the wanting to eviscerate everyone and everything all the time. And one of his kids told a story about him tackling him through a glass table during a game of living room football. Like, he couldn't stop that. He couldn't help himself.
Have you seen that video of him at like the Chris Paul, like this is in, you know, he's old. He's at a Chris Paul like basketball camp.
No.
And so Chris Paul like bets him, "If you miss a shot, I will get all these campers a pair of Jordans."
Yeah, yeah. Actually,
the whole
maybe
camp.
I have seen this, yeah.
Yeah, and then he proceeds to gleefully make them all.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just who he is. Like,
that's what it is.
He's not
going
to miss one shot to give the kids free shoes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's fine. But when it turns into just more of like just I want to break you down.
I get why you don't like
you know?
It. You know, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I get it. And I might not like it if I hadn't been rooting for it my entire childhood. But
right.
He, you know, I cherish the fact that we're getting sort of the real version of this in more documented form, because I always had heard this stuff about Jordan. I knew it in that way, but this is pretty unvarnished. And even if he has some editorial control and there are some things that don't get explored, I feel like we're getting an unprecedented look inside with a guy who notoriously did not want to do that.
Yeah, I'm appreciative of that. I will say, it sure would have been interesting to hear at least one other Dream Team member say, "I didn't want Isaiah Thomas around in 1992. If supposedly there were so many that also felt that way, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, Yeah, I don't know. Other people said it besides Jordan. Like Rod Thorne.
Not other players said it. It was all other journalists that were saying it.
That's true. None of the other players said it. And I wonder if that's more about there weren't other players who were willing to say it or other players didn't want to be on record. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and Zach Lowe made an interesting point in that, you know, in that he, Jordan and Rod Thorne had this, did not, you know, air like plausible deniability that they sort of installed in their conversation.
Right.
You know, where he's like, Jordan never has to say Isaiah Thomas's name so that he can say, I didn't say Isaiah Thomas's name.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And that you know. They obviously did that on purpose. And there's no question if Michael had wanted Isaiah on the team, Isaiah would have been on the team. That said,
I think if Michael had been indifferent to whether Isaiah was on the team, he would have been on the team.
That I'd say is 50-50, because what I was going to add is the bad relationships between Isaiah Thomas and the other members of that team are well documented. They don't have to say now, I didn't want him on the team. They might have been fine. They might have acquiesced to having him on the team. But the fact that Isaiah Thomas didn't get along with Larry Bird or Magic Johnson or basically anybody else on that team, that's a fact.
Yeah, although, look, I think Isaiah made up with a lot of those guys over the course of time. So you'd have to say where they were at that particular moment.
Oh, totally.
You know?
That's right. So I think post-career, Isaiah seems to be reasonably well-liked, other than by Knicks fans. But during his career...
And the Bulls. I don't think Jordan and Pippen have let it go.
Oh, no, not at all. Well, Jordan.
Yeah.
I bet Scottie's let it all go.
I don't know. You know, by the way, I just learned that Jordan and Barkley are not on good terms anymore.
Oh, yeah. That was like 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
I know, because it was when they were still the Bobcats and Jordan was GM and Barkley crushed him on Inside the NBA.
Yeah. Well, I like Barkley's point about it. I think the other thing that was really noteworthy, at least for me personally in all this, was going back and reliving the Jesse Helm stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I lived in North Carolina at that time.
Oh, I didn't. I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, and I felt that one.
What? So
really personally, you know.
Say more on that.
I just think that, you know, look, Jesse Helms, as the documentary kind of said, Unchallenged, is just a reprehensible human being.
Yeah.
And certainly a reprehensible political figure. In my world, and I think a person who would just believe that I was less of a person, and lots of other people, including Michael Jordan, were less of people.
Yeah.
And,
but do you remember at the time feeling like upset with Jordan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And that, you know, that comment, which whether it was a joke or not, certainly floated around. I believe it was even in Sports Illustrated, the Republicans buy sneakers.
I know. I believe it was in the Jordan rules.
I think
wherever it came out from the Jordan rules. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think
that
Sam
was very
Smith
much
said it
out
too.
There. Yeah.
It was everywhere. And it was a joke. But it's not a joke you make if you don't kind of mean it.
Yeah. And I think Obama put it fairly well.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's just a bit of an extra weight and you have more respect for guys like Muhammad Ali, and now guys like LeBron that are like not going to shrink from that. And, you know, in the context now watching this, you can sort of see Jordan's sort of single-mindedness about, you know, things that might take him away. But at the same
time,
like, it's also a dude that would play golf. You know what I mean?
No doubt. Like,
You know, and 36 holes before an NBA final. So
he donated to Harvey Gantt. I think,
but that means so much less, honestly, than what the most popular athlete in the world in an election that was pretty razor thin in a state where he is insanely popular.
Yep.
You know, if he had taken a position that really could have done some good, you know,
I just don't think he was up for it. That's all totally fair. And I don't think that's even a question. He wasn't up for it. I mean, he says that. He tells you he wasn't up for it. And
I just, for me, that's another thing that just always sort of made it hard to like fully embrace him as a human, you know?
yeah,
for me.
I think that's totally understandable. I can understand why anyone feels that way. It's really not – it's hard for me to step into anyone's shoes on this. But from the Jordan perspective, I will say this part of it. I understand conceptually. I don't know this guy. I don't necessarily want to do a PSA for some dude I don't know in some election in a place I no longer live. The thing is, that's not a fair way to describe Harvey Gantt versus Jesse Helms. It's not just some guy. You know what I mean?
It's not just some guy running against some guy. And by the way, I think North Carolina is still waiting on its first black senator.
That's somewhat beside the point, because the real point here is, like, this was, as if you'll forgive the expression, pun not originally intended, this is a pretty black and white situation.
Yeah.
Where one person stands for a variety of things that involve politics, and one person is evil.
Yeah.
And yep. So I'm not sure that the, hey, look, I just didn't want to put my billion-dollar name on some dude I didn't know enough about. I'm not sure that plays.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he probably does deserve some criticism, but also what Obama says is totally true. Like, yes, it would have helped. Yes, you wish he would have done it if that's, you know, if you're a progressive, decent human being. But also, I don't know that it's fair to say he owes anybody anything.
No, and I'm not saying he owes.
I know you're
I don't think
I know
he owes me, you know what I mean, or
no,
anybody
totally.
Else, obviously.
And like I said, it's clearly disappointing for, you know, the majority, not the majority, sadly, but a huge swath of people that you would hope Michael Jordan cares about and identifies with.
Yeah.
But it's also, I get uncomfortable around any of these sorts of things that we do in society now where people owe us things because they're famous. And
yeah.
Like,
no, I agree.
I think there's something to that in terms of, like, don't be awful. Don't be, like, publicly constantly awful. Because you're setting an example on some level, but in terms of, like, you have to provide X, Y, or Z for me, it gets very sticky very fast.
Yeah. For me, it's more like, hey, this is a thing you could have done that would really take you up another level.
And I don't think there's any arguing with that. This is a thing he could have done, and he chose not to for whatever reason.
Right. And, you know, those reasons are his own. Yeah. Okay, we've got a lot of shows to talk about, so let's
slam through this. The good news is I don't have a lot to say about some of them.
Okay, yeah, no. Is Billions one of those?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. This is right, your reaction to Billions is like, well, it's good to have it back, right?
Yes.
And that's
but
other than that, it was a fairly mediocre episode, I thought.
And that's why I would say, yes, it is good to have it back. It's distinctly not great to have it back right now.
Yeah, agree with
like,
that.
Like, and if this, like, so far, the setup of, Chuck and Axe are back at each other's throats again, but this time pretending not to be, that's not going to quite, if that's all we got, this is probably my last season of Billions, you know?
Yeah, because you know they're like a triple cross, and they're like, okay, great. So what is next? Are we doing a quadruple cross next year?
Right.
You
can't just add a cross each year and call it a day. We need more.
Yeah,
and to the show's credit, that is not what they did for the first three or four seasons of the show. They added layers each season.
Right, and then obviously bringing Taylor in sort of, you know, flipped some of that dynamic some, and I think that was a really interesting move. And that's why I sort of feel like, why not really make this more revolve around the rivalry between the Corey Stahl character and Axe, and have
Taylor in the middle.
Right. Taylor and Chuck. You know what I mean? It's sort of these, like, destabilizing agents.
And maybe that's what happens.
Yeah. I just don't think that the show's willing to put Giamatti off to the side enough to make that happen.
Maybe. You might be right, but I just don't know what I have left with him right now. He's been through the same pace. Like, when he walked out of the dominatrix and, oops, important family stuff happened while you were getting, like, your balls pulled on. It's like, okay, I get it. He's marginally irresponsible sexually. Like, enough already.
I did enjoy the fake out speech at the wedding, though.
Okay, but like, remember,
that was a good setup.
It was. That was fun. But remember, his like dominatrix proclivities were a big reveal in like episode one, season one, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to still be mining that. I think we've done everything we can there.
Agree. I feel like they have. You're right. They've taken that one to the brink and back at this point. And you're right. It's still a good hang, but they're gonna need to find, I feel like, a little bit more to hang this season on.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like, honestly, Wendy could use a little bit more of a you know, some more things to do. We've sort of seen her vacillate the same scale.
Nice drop in by Becky Lynch, the man, though. I met her. I got to meet and interview Becky Lynch for, you know, 20 minutes or something like that for something with the radio station. And what a delightful young lady, first of all. But also, she's one of those people, and I know you've been in the room with people like this over the course of your career, where, like, she walks into the room and you immediately understand why she's a superstar. Immediately.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, it shines off of her in person. So that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Plus, an essential worker. Shout out to the real heroes.
Oh, God. All right. Speaking of premium TV shows that I wasn't totally thrilled with, what did you think of Betty?
Oh, I think we're going to go the other way on this one, because I thought Betty was delightful, and I cannot wait to watch more.
Okay. I'm not going to tell you it wasn't delightful. I have a weird criticism. I didn't say it wasn't good even. I just said I wasn't thrilled with it. And
okay.
My complaint is bizarre, but we so often come on this show after watching one episode of a totally new thing and say, look, that was pretty pilot-y, but I enjoyed it. I think I'm in. Right?
Or, and you're saying this is the opposite of pilot-y?
Yes. This was not pilot-y enough. I don't know anything about what's happening here in like what feels like a kind of an essential way to me. I don't know who these people are or like what their goals are at all. And like that doesn't feel like the point of the show. You know what I mean? There are times when like that's what you're doing. You're trying to figure out the motivations and understand, but that's not this. This is a show about people, and I don't feel like I even hardly met these people.
Yeah, see, I was utterly charmed by all of them. You know what I mean? And you're right. I think, look, their point as characters or as people is that they don't have a lot of direction, right? You know what I mean? So I don't know that you're going to find out a ton about their motivation, but I do think it shades of them will be revealed. But I also thought it was so fun to just watch them hang and sort of have like weird adventures. And if they have to go, you know, look for somebody's weed every week, like I would watch that show.
I think I would too.
The music was great.
Yeah.
You know, the people were charming. I thought the skate scenes were really well done.
I thought it just felt
so real and lived in, you know what I mean? And like, it was a world I wanted to spend time in. And, you know, a world you get glimpses of, like, obviously there's some shades of kids, I feel like, in this, you know what I mean?
Not just in who the kids are, but also in, and I thought this was the best part of it, the way it's shot and the way, like, all the camera work is very kidsy and also very, like, you use the phrase lived in, and I would almost say, like, it feels like you're in the hang. The way it's shot, you're like in the circle.
It's extremely naturalistic, and they clearly used a lot of real skate kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I think I would guess most, if not all, of the main characters are real skate kids because they skate. They skate a little too well to just be actors.
Yeah, agreed. Like, and it just feels really natural. And then the scene where the one that doesn't skate and they're teaching her how to skate, like, I thought that was really great. And Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I'm just in. I want to know more. Like, I want to know about that, the girl with the brother who's got, like, a little bit of attitude. And, like, yeah. I just want to know more about what her deal is. And, like, you know, I was really compelled and transfixed and excited by this show.
Like, I feel like
I dare say it's my favorite thing I watched this week.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't go that far. But I did enjoy it. I was left feeling like, all right, I just hung out with some skater kids for 25 minutes, but, like, I don't know where this is going.
Yeah. No, I can't tell you. I totally know where it's going, but I'm along for the ride. And I sort of like that I don't know where it's going, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I guess there's nothing wrong with it. I'm definitely going to watch next week. I definitely am going to watch this on Sunday to see what happens next. And you know, where I do agree with you that, like, there's something very charming about all of these characters.
Yeah, I also feel like top-notch smoking show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, with the music and just the vibe. I'm into it. I was less into Upload. What did you think about Upload?
You know, it's like a... It's just it. I can't tell you it's great, but it's going down real smooth for me.
Oh, interesting. Like, it's also not bad. It has. I felt like it has some interesting ideas.
Yes, but it's like, and I don't want to compare it too much to The Good Place because that's so obvious. But it's the ideas, the seeds of ideas are quite nearly, if not as good as The Good Place. They are not played out nearly as thoughtfully, which makes it to me like sort of a less important show, maybe, or like a less philosophically interesting show. But I laugh a decent amount. I really enjoy the two leads, and I've watched like 6 or 7 of them.
Yeah, I think I'm at like 7. The two leads are great, and their romance, or, you know, their will they or won't they, I guess maybe is a better way of putting it, is that part's been really well done.
Yeah.
But it was not quite enough laughs for me, and I think the difference between this and in any of the not just The Good Place, any of the other stuff they've worked on, or any of really the other Afterlife shows that we have watched now, I just didn't find the characters in general as compelling. You know, like, they're building out this broader world. And I think that's been one of the strengths of these sort of Greg Daniels, Mike Schur shows, is just the deep bench of, like, interesting people that sort of make it a world that you want to come back to week after week. And I don't have that yet.
Yeah, the only supporting character that I have any interest in is her coworker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who I,
you know, and they're sort of setting up a will they or won't they there.
Yeah.
Too, you know.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, there just aren't enough. And I realize, obviously, they're trying to make, you know, some of these characters unlikable by choice. But it just doesn't.
But there's
not
the unlikable.
Some of its parts for me.
Right.
It's not bad, but it's not. It's not a.
The Good Place is kind of the perfect example, again, I hate to keep doing this, but of a show where, like, the unlikable characters are also tremendous.
Yes, agreed. They're great to hang out with, you know
right.
what I mean?
Whereas his girlfriend in this is just like, all right, I get it, she sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, to the show's credit, she's not on it that much. But it's still kind of like I see what you're doing here, but you really sort of half-assed this part of it.
Yep. Happy to see Zoe Kravitz's cute little daughter from Big Little Lies in this.
She's delightful too. I forgot. Yeah. She also is quite enjoyable.
Yeah, she's one of the supporting characters that they should keep around. Look, yeah. I probably been harsh on this because I'm gonna watch all of it. Like, I'll
finish
it. It's worth a look. But I don't know. I feel like I had slightly higher expectations.
Yeah, well, they've certainly been selling it real hard.
Yeah, well, you know, Amazon don't have that many shows. Speaking of high expectations, I'm really enjoying Normal People, but I do feel like it suffered a little bit for me in just how great I heard it was.
Yeah, do you remember what you told me about this last week?
I don't exactly. You want to tell me?
I'd say, well, I was hoping you remembered because I'm not sure I remember it exactly.
I think I just gave you the Rotten Tomatoes number, which was like 98 or something like that.
Right.
You know.
But I thought you said like it was like I mean, I know you said something about Ireland, and I thought I was about to start watching something pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't. I was not thinking it was a comedy.
So
because I remember we talked about the sex. I did tell you there was going to be a lot of sex. I wasn't wrong about that.
Yeah, but it's not. Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. There's some sex, but it's not like so much sex that I feel like you need to warn somebody ahead of time.
No, that's also true.
And this is a very unique show.
Agreed.
And there is something essentially UK about like a dark, slow moving, sort of ponderous relationship drama, but it is very good.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very interesting, and there is an authenticity about it,
and it's examining
really
like
appealing.
It's examining some weird relationship dynamics that are very real that maybe don't get put in movies and TV that much.
Yeah. And I had this hope, you know, I mean, this came from a novel and the novelist is, you know, adapted it for television. Mm-hmm. And so I have this hope that it's going to be this sort of novelistic thing that is going to continue to like flower and grow. And by the end, I'm going to be like, oh, you know, in hindsight, I loved every second of it. You know what I mean?
I think that's very possible. I think you may have mentioned the novel thing, but now that you say it again, it makes sense. It is very bookish. And I mean that as a double entendre. It is both bookish and bookish.
Yeah. So I'm having a good time. And I think if I would be having an even better time if I hadn't heard from so many people that it's amazing.
Okay,
you know what I
but
mean?
Are you having a good time? Or are you just
good time's not
enjoying
the wrong. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Yeah.
Because it's not a good time. It's not a bad time. It's just like
it's a lifetime. You know what I mean? Like
that's exactly what I was going to say. It's just like a this is what life is sort of a time. And
Right. Life
can be kind of dark and messed up and also kind of joyous and crazy. And I don't know. It is oddly compelling without being particularly engaging, if that makes sense.
That is an excellent way to put it right there. Although it probably won't make the poster.
It's
I feel
too
like
late.
That sums it up.
Too late for the poster. Otherwise, I mean, they're listening. Don't kid yourself.
And I like it, as I said, I am interested to see where it goes. And I like the way that they're sort of sprawling it out over time. And watching these sort of characters grow in different directions. So we'll see. Could go somewhere really, really wild after that. Is that it? Did we cover everything?
I think we did. We did it. It didn't take a short amount of time, if that's what you're suggesting.
You're right. It sure didn't. Did you happen to finish Brockmire?
No, I've been saving them because I like to binge them all in a row.
All right. Well, do you want to binge them for homework this week?
Totally.
Let's throw that in there because we have otherwise a fairly light schedule, knowing that we're going to talk about Top Chef and the Challenge and Last Dance 7 and 8. To that, let's also add the Jerry Seinfeld special that came out on Tuesday. I forget the title of it, but I'm sure Netflix ain't going to make it real hard to find. And then there's a new season of Dead to Me that drops tomorrow. Actually, I guess, in fact, it at least where I live, I could probably find it on my Netflix right now because it's now technically Friday.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
thank you.
Okay, so let's recap because I spaced out while you were talking about your personal issues. We've got
Dead to Me?
Dead to Me. No, but what was
that's the Christina Applegate.
Yes, but first Linda you Cardellini. Said something that we hadn't previously discussed, which is
Brockmire.
I have to finish Brockmire. Yes, I can't wait to finish Brockmire.
Yeah, that one goes fast. And then the Seinfeld special. Those are our three for next week.
Got it. I'm locked in. Brockmire, Dead to Me, Seinfeld special.
Let's do it.
All right. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.